Greetings. Welcome to the podcast series Roots Reggae Reasoning Sessions, a platform that focuses on roots reggae music. I'm your host, Rasaki Mascani. And this evening, before I introduce the guests, I want to make a few two observations, and I want to explain those. I want to say that roots reggae music is a positive life-changing agent. I'm going to say it one more time. Roots reggae music is a positive life-changing agent. And I want to tell you why I say that. The summer of 1983, I graduated from Compton High School in 1983, Compton, California.
Wow. And
I got a scholarship to play basketball at Washington State University. And before the fall, the summer, I traveled from Compton, California to Washington State University. I drove there and along with one of the other recruits. And then what happened was I had purchased the cassette tape Confrontation by Bob Marley and the Wailers. And I played that reggae, roots reggae cassette tape the whole summer, and it changed my life. And it also changed my life to being something better than what it was.
Ugh.
I mean, if you know anything about roots reggae, it's very uplifting.
Yes,
very
it is.
Uplifting, and it touches your soul. And also educates you about things you may not know when it comes to spirituality.
That's right.
So that's one of the reasons why I say it's a life-changing agent, and it's positive, because that's what it did for me. And that was 42 years ago, people.
Wow.
And reggae has impacted my life the whole time. So that's why I say that. And then another observation. Roots reggae music is a world power.
True, true.
It's a world power. And
that's
the reason
right.
why I say that is because anytime I go look for reggae music and I get to live concerts, and I mean, it's all over the world. And I'm talking about thousands of people come out to enjoy themselves with roots reggae music. When I'm talking about roots reggae music, I'm talking about music with a purpose.
That's right.
It has a purpose, and it's a part of humanity. It's a humane thing when it's in its proper context. We talk about excellent music instruments, excellent music instruments. I'm talking about the bass and drum and rhythm.
The musicianship,
the musical content, what they're talking about. We're talking about things in reggae that, you know, this is something you can play for your grandma and grandpa.
That's right. And for your children.
Mm-hmm. And for your children.
That's
and
right.
To help grow them, to groom them. You know, we're not talking about this negative entities that we see in the mainstream media to influence our people. We're not
right.
To influence them in a negative way.
That's right.
So I don't want to talk too much more, but one more thing. I was listening to a live concert on YouTube, Israel Vibration. There's only one surviving member left in the Roots Reggae fans.
That's Wiz.
They were in another country, and the crowd was singing their music with them the whole time.
Israel Vibration is one of Jamaica's best reggae kept secrets. I don't understand why they weren't. I mean, to see them dance on their crutches, man, please.
Yeah, and they knew the music, and they were singing, and they were enjoying themselves immensely. And we're not talking about in the United States, not Jamaica, not the Caribbean. We talk about in I can't even think. I wish I could tell you where they were. It was it I can't.
It was somewhere. Somewhere in Europe, because I think
it was
I
in Europe.
Same clip.
Oh, I mean, it was a beautiful sight. I mean, just to see that. And this guy is one remaining member left, and this guy was just uplifted to sing with them. And it was Weiss, Brother Weiss.
Yeah,
Weiss.
Weiss.
Okay, yeah. Weiss. So in the Roots Radix band, I'm talking about. One of the foundational roots bands. I mean, just excellent.
That's
we talking about this is years and years later, so it's it's a great thing, people. So I'm gonna go ahead and get to why we're here this evening. This evening, there was a historical concert back in 1983 at Long Beach State University, and we have three people here that was instrumental in that event. We got Mashariki Ramey. We got one of the musicians that actually played. That's 42 years ago. Played in that. Brother Lester Farrakh Simbarashi. He had to pronounce his last name because I just.
Yeah, Simbarashi.
And this brother, I know, and he's still performing. And we
still
got sister,
performing.
We got
Whoa.
Sister Den J. Dennis. And she could see herself y'all
my,
about herself.
I wasn't really a part of putting, I was a part
of
a participant. I didn't put anything together. It was my first reggae concert.
You was there and you was a part of the BSU, so you was a part of that.
Yes. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, you was a part of that. You was there.
You got your props
so I'm going to turn it over to Mashariki Ramey and let her moderate for a while, and then I'll come back later on. Thanks a billion for being here. You all and the guests, welcome. And I want to hear all of this great history. All right, Mashariki.
Thank you so much for allowing us to share this story. And before I go any further, I just want to say that Reggae Beach Blast, which took place on May the 15th, 1983, was actually thought of by a young man at that time, Mr. Danny Barrett, who was Jamaican, who had the connections and the vision, and he, along with his later wife, Ayanna Barrett, had an idea, and they were able to make it a reality. Unfortunately, they're not able to be on with us today, but we are still going to go forward and be grateful that he had the vision in order to bring Reggae Beach Blast to Long Beach State. This was the first time I was a student at that time, where I just graduated, but I'm a former student, former BSU member also. We thought it would be a good idea to have a Reggae Beach Blast, an outdoor concert. Prior to that, I think Bob Marley had passed away, but he never did. When he came to Southern California, he usually played at UCLA, and it was indoor concerts. There was no outdoor concerts. So I believe Long Beach State was even before UCLA started having their outdoor concerts. This particular concert included Marcia Griffith, who was formerly of the I3s with Bob Marley. It included Eka Mouse, who was tall and very boisterous. It also included a Caribbean dance troupe. It included Freddie McGregor. I believe this was his first time performing, I know, in Southern California. I don't know if it was California itself. And then also Small Axe, which was Brother Lester Farrakh's group, which they were the backing band. And it was
they only back Ike Mouse.
Okay, but they have backed several groups besides.
Oh, yeah, legendary, standard.
So we're happy to be able to have this discussion. We thought that it would be a great idea to not only share this moment in time, it's been 42 years ago, but for any students that, especially at Long Beach State or any school, they have to realize that that money that goes into the administration and from the school's tuition, they can use that money for whatever it is that they're interested in. We, at that time, we were very aggressive and forward-thinking. We had all sorts of programs. We brought every historian, a Black historian and scholar that was alive, we brought them to Long Beach State to speak to us in what was called the Consciousness Conference. So we were somewhat ahead of our time. We were at a
That Black Consciousness Conference set standards.
So we were a Black university inside of a white university we pretty much were free to do whatever we were, and we made it our business and a point under the direction of Professor Amin Ra to bring anybody that could help us to be able to be critical thinkers and to think out of the box and be free to be whoever we wanted to be. And I'm grateful. I think that was a grounding period for all of us. It established a lot of people who ended up getting jobs, professional careers in the music industry. One of them being an ancestor now, Mr. Jerry Davis, who I will talk about him later because we did participate with him and things, but he went on to be very big in rap and hip hop in the music industry as a professional. We also had Michael Williams, who is still working in the music industry. He works with different artists to this day. And there have been other artists that have passed through Long Beach State that I'm not going to mention at this time. So even though Long Beach State was not officially a school for people that were interested in having professional careers in the music industry, for some kind of way, it did create this to happen. And thank goodness there are still people that are still working in the industry.
And she froze.
We're all in.
What happened?
Who's frozen? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
All right. Yeah,
okay. Oh, that was somebody trying to call.
Oh, okay. Okay, Ginger. Okay. All right. So I wanted to open up by first, I would like to start with Mr. Lester Farai, because he is a person who has been a musician for a long time. He was a part of the foundational group of Small Acts. They do still perform. He still is a musician. His group did a lot of backing of different artists. When they would come here from Jamaica, a lot of times it would be expensive. You can't bring the whole group. So if the headline can come, his group would be the one to pull the band together and play the music for them. And what just happened? Oh, okay. All right. So Lester, can you share a little bit about yourself with us at this time? And we have a flyer showing of his next concert, which I'm looking forward to seeing on April the 26th, which is on a Saturday.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, I'm honored to be here. I'd like to say greetings in the name of the Most High God, Jahreh Sapphira. Lord of Lords, the conquering lion of the tribe of Judah. So when you're loving Jah and representing, I and I feel we should just do it with simplicity and humbleness. So we just simply say, Jah!
Rastafari!
No apologies, because this is Black spirituality, African spiritualities, with no apologies. Now, with that being said, I started playing music per se. I was 11 years old playing drums.
Wow. That was my
first instrument. And I was always around the house beating on things and making beats and stuff. So I was really into drums. And my birth strong is on Christmas Day. So I begged my mother and father to please get me a drum set. You know, combine my birth strong, Christmas gift, whatever. Just please let me get this drum set. So I finally got the drum set, and that's what I started playing the drums for a few years. And I was really serious about it. And eventually, when my parents end up divorcing, splitting up, we moved. And I grew up here in Southern California. So we were living in Culver City. We moved to Venice, and my room, I didn't have enough space to set up my drums, so I didn't play drums anymore. But I was always hearing drum music and guitar music, so I always loved guitar. And so later on, I got exposed to the blues, funk, jazz, you know, different genres of music from my parents and my relatives, you know, coming up. So the music bug was in me deeply. It's not until I got in high school and we relocated to Atlanta, and I went to high school in Atlanta for a while, and I started playing guitar. And so basically I started playing around 16, 17. And I just, you know, really loved the guitar immensely, to the point where I just had to get involved in music more than just listening or being someone on the sidelines. So I started you know, checking friends, taking lessons from friends. Left school, came back here to California and started working. And I worked in a warehouse for a few years and to a point I said, well, I need to start going to school for music, take some courses because I want to learn more about music other than just jamming or learning from, you know, friends. So I enrolled in LACC in the mid-70s and took some music theory classes and a classical guitar class and beginning voice class. So I started refining my talents, my gifts, to be able to, you know, participate more professionally. So moving on, started playing and getting, you know, proficient, put it like that, and started playing with other bands and people. And that was like in the 70s, so we're talking about funk music and rock and blues. And I became aware of Jimi Hendrix, became my idol, along with B.B. King and Carlos Santana, a lot of great guitarists, and I was influenced by it. So I just started really studying and playing on a serious level. During this time in the 70s, so I'm going to give you a little bit of history because things, they're all relatable. Everything relates. But we're talking about the 70s. And during the 70s, a lot, you know, funk was at its heights. But then disco came in. And disco really kind of ruined a lot of great musicianship because the music became mechanical. The funk became more of a formula. And Europeans start controlling it on a level. So the music changed. So a lot of musicians got really despondent with the business because we weren't really into disco. So by the time I started getting more into just world music, because I love Indian ragas, you know, classical music, just music from all over the world. I listen to everything. And started getting acclimated to reggae. And seeing advertisements for the Wailers. So I started checking them out. And once I did check it out, I said, oh, wow, I recognize this music. This is me. I should be playing this music. Never tried to play. Never tried to play it. But I was like, this is me. I already know this is me. So, but before I started playing it, it was a transitional period because in the 70s, there was a lot of drugs. When I say drugs, I mean cocaine, you know, heroin and acid, all that stuff was around. Okay, but cocaine, and then the freebase stuff came in, the PCP, angel dust, and all these drugs. So yeah, I smoke herb. Been smoking herb for a long time. And a friend, let me try some angel dust. I've been telling about all this angel dust. It's, you know, you got to try it. It's a new herb and blah, blah, blah. So, okay. So I tried it. And the first time I smoked it was like I was in a dream. I couldn't believe it. It's like, what is this? What kind of high is this? This is something different. So I said, oh, I'm going to try it again. Because that first time was just, you know, it's different. I tried it again and hated it. All my favorite music where there was Miles Davis, Jimi Hendrix, Herbie Hancock, all the great music that I loved sounded horrible, all of it. And me, myself, but I felt dirty. I never felt like that with just ganja, just straight herb, you know. And I was like, you know what? This stuff is some devil stuff, okay? This shit ain't right. I'm leaving this lot. I had a little bag of it. I gave it away. And I'm like, you know what? This stuff ain't right. And in fact, I don't even want to even get high. I ain't want to do none of it because it's just dirty. It ain't right. So I've started really trying to search and find myself. So I stopped smoking for a few years. And I just started meditating, dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, just investigating and going within. And you know, honestly, I had tried snorting cocaine, but I was like, this ain't me. I ain't in it. I don't like it. And I ain't doing it. It's a rich man's thing. I'm poor. I ain't got no money for this. I don't really enjoy it. So I'm done with that. So I moved on from that. But a lot of musicians were doing cocaine, PCP, PCP, Sherm, smoking Sherm, angel dust. And I'm like, I'm done with all of it. So acid. And honestly, I mean, I had taken acid back in the early 70s, and it was beautiful. It was an experience that was deep. I mean, that's what the yogis are doing naturally. They go into these higher states naturally without any exterior substances. So I realized that's the real goal, is to reach in these places mentally without any outside substances. So I really got turned off from the whole drug thing. And I was just praying to the Most High to reveal to me my direction, my next direction, because I was already playing funk and I could play some blues, a little bit of jazz. I had already, you know, heard a little calypso and all that. So I knew I could play different genres of music, but then reggae hit me and I was like, oh, I got to play this music. So I was just praying for some guidance. And I got a chance to go see Bob. And we were talking, you were mentioning outside concerts. Well, this was 1978. And this was at Starlight Burbank.
Oh. Burbank
Starlight Amphitheater.
Wonderful venue.
Okay. And this is my first time seeing Bob. And it blew my mind because I didn't know any dreadlocks, no Rastaman in town, none, not one. Okay, let alone even seeing any. And I saw a couple of brethren. I remember brethren who I'm working with right now, Jai. I remember seeing him with his big crown, and his brother Bernie, his drummer. But I didn't know them. I just saw them. But then I'm seeing, you know, the different races, from Hispanics, Asians, Africans, whites. And I'm like, wow, I've been to a few concerts and rock concerts and stuff, but this is like the world family. This is where it's at. This is how it should be. So that really impressed me. So, but then going to the concert, everybody smoking, having a good time. Little Anthony and the Imperials opened the show. So we weren't really in there. We were waiting for Bob. We were about just really waiting.
Oh, wait, they opened for Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Didn't show you say Bob was trying to really infiltrate the Black American audience.
Yes,
he wanted more of African Americans coming to his shows. Same with Jimi Hendrix. He wanted the same thing. And he was trying to do that before he passed. So I was really impressed when I went to the show and seen all these different races and people. And the show was spectacular. But what blew my mind, it was when Bob came out on stage. And even before he came out on stage, it was still light. And seeing the backdrop, the whole stage, the musicians, I had an epiphany. And the epiphany was like when you experience deja vu. I'm laughing now because at the time I had chill bumps, I mean, from the top of my head to my toes, and I was just electrified. I was like, what is going on? I've been here before. I've experienced this. Why is it that all this is so familiar to me? This is me. I know this. I know this music. I know all of this, what's going on. It's like I experienced it already, but I haven't. But I have. So I was confused. I was like, what's going on? So it was an epiphany. I mean, seriously, spiritually, it was an awakening. I was in shock. It was like, even my high, like I lost my high. Because I was so in shock of what I was feeling. So the show was incredible. And I remember Peter Tosh was in town on tour because he was touring and opening up shows for the Rolling Stones. So during the concert, Bob was performing. You see Marvin Gaye and Diana Ross and all these stars and people on the side of the stage just watching Bob. I mean, it was electrifying. It was electric.
Wow.
And when he went into Get Up, Stand Up, he's doing Get Up, Stand Up and doing the lyrics. And we know the song, but right when Peter Tosh's part comes in, here comes Peter walking up on stage. Bob is in a trance with his eyes closed, singing the whole concert, basically. And Peter comes up right up to the mic and starts singing his part. And Bob looked up and just couldn't believe it. Big smile. And they embraced. And it was just a magical moment. That was my first time seeing Bob and Peter. So it was magical. Okay. So, I mean, you know, you go home, you're electrified.
Wow.
You're on cloud nine for months. You can't wait to see this brother again. So all you talking about, thinking about is Bob Marley and the Wailers or just reggae roots. Okay.
How old were you?
I was like about 24, 20, 23, 24. Mm-hmm. Somewhere up there. It was just an awakening. It was just an experience. And you go home, you're telling your relatives, your friends, everybody, anybody you can tell, you just, you know, like a zealot. You want to just tell everybody, you know, that what you saw and experienced, you want them to experience too. So Bob was scheduled to come around again the following year at Poly Pavilion. So we got tickets. Myself, my wife, her mother, her two brothers, her sister. It was like a family, some other extended family. It was a family affair. And this is 79. First year was 78, and then, 79 was the Poly Pavilion show. And it was like church. It's like the most electrifying experience you've ever had in church or spiritually. It was that 10 times over. I mean, it was church. Everybody inside the arena was on their feet. Nobody sat the whole church. It was.
That's the foreign. I hate to interrupt you, man, but
go ahead.
Can you tell me if now these two shows that you're talking about, are they on video? I've never seen these.
No, there's pictures of online of Peter and Bob when Peter came out on stage with Bob. There's pictures of that. I've never heard the shows live footage of the show, but there's pictures of the actual incident when it happened. Because I've commented on it. I posted it on my Facebook page and commented on it. I was there when it happened. So there's still footage of that. Now, the Poly Pavilion show, I'm not sure of. And I was, you know, friends with Neville Garrett before he passed. Ashay, God bless him. But I haven't heard of any footage from the Poly Pavilion show. But, I mean, I just wish that someone had it or has it and it would surface. Because, I mean, God, trust me, it's hard to convey, you know, this little screen to you how we felt. The closest thing I can say is like church, amplified 10 times, 100 times over. It was just electric. The brother was everything he ever heard and have seen, even none of that stuff compares on film when you see him live.
That's the part. Can I say
electrifying? So he changed my life. From I saw him in Burbank, I was changed. I came home. I went combing my hair. I was working in a warehouse, going to work, and they thought I was crazy. I said, "What this nigga?"
All right. Can I say this, please?
Yes. Go
Revolution
ahead.
Will not be televised.
That's right. That's right. Unless it's Kendrick Lamar, okay?
They not like us.
But no.
Hey,
but
you know what? I think the next time I talk to Roger Stephens, I'm going to ask him if he has any footage.
Yeah, I'll be okay, sure. Yeah. Because he and I, we talked about the show, and he's the one, I think, clarified what year it was, because I was thinking the Burbank show was 77.
And I'm sorry, for those that don't know who Roger Stephens is, can you give a little background?
Yeah, okay, Roger is considered a reggae historian, an expert on all things reggae or Bob Marley. That can be somewhat controversial, because some people have issues with that. But, I mean, basically, the mind is really, you know, he's dedicated his life to reggae music. Bob Marley changed him like he changed me. So
that's right.
The mind loves
Bob. And you know, Roger is in the middle of going to take his archives to Jamaica. That's where he's always wanted his archives to go.
Right. Well, I know we had talked about that because he would tell me to come by and get some audio tapes and stuff from small act shows or some different things. And then and so we've hooked up and we've talked about linking up again, but I just hadn't done it. But yeah, and even backing up, okay, so when I was talking about 79, when I saw Bob, you know, the second time, how electrifying it was and life-changing. And like I said, from the first time I saw him, he changed me. My life changed. I'm looking for all things Rasta, reading everything I can. I'm reabsorbing any information I can on Rasta because I didn't know anyone that could help me on those levels. And I'm starting to dread and not knowing what to do or who to talk to. I just know that I'm throwing this comb away and I'm moving on another level differently. So I went through this whole metamorphosis and then, you know, I had to come out. I wasn't really ready in 78 the first time. So I started my Natties again after the second time I saw him. We saw him again in 79. So 1980 is when I started again. I said, okay, I'm done home. I'm done with all this Babylon madness. And, you know, so I had said to myself, I got to go to Jamaica. I have to go to Jamaica as a spiritual pilgrimage to meet brethren, to get this firsthand. I can't get it here in the city from wannabes or secondhand information. I need to get it directly. So I went to Jamaica in 81. February, March of 81. And it's funny, before I'd left, I spoke to Roger Stephens. I was going to Jamaica. So he said, okay, well, you know, before you leave, come see me. So I did. He wrote a little letter saying that he's a disc jockey here in LA. And if any music that anyone wanted to donate or share, to forward it, and he would play it. So I was showing, so I had this letter and I would show it to a few different record shops and different people. And they were giving me all these 45s and stuff. So I'll come back with a whole gang of music. So, but the funny thing also, another mystic thing is that when I did go to Jamaica the first time, I met Horsemouth. Okay. And we know, like I said, back then, you know, we're watching reggae, Heartland, Sunsplash on film, anything about reggae and Rasta on film, we're watching. So we saw Reggae Heartland, Rockers. So when I saw the movie, so I get to Jamaica, now I'm meeting Horsemouth, same man that I've been seeing.
Rastafari. You can't believe.
It was unbelievable. And so he was like an escort. He took me everywhere.
He
exposed me to the 12 tribes. I told him I wanted to meet Chinna, because I love Chinna. And, you know, so he took me, went to Kingston. He took me to High Times. High Times, because that was the name of the band at the time, and in his record shop in Kingston.
Kingston Mall.
Yeah, so when we went to the record shop, I meet Chinna, and they had a juice bar inside the record shop. Who's behind the juice bar? Muta Baruka.
Right. Bamba Rastafari.
It's 1981. Muta was running. And that's why I met Muta. And he had just released his first single, Every Time I Hear the Sound.
Blood, boom, 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 boom.
So I'm telling Horsemouth said, man, I want to meet Bob. So, and we had heard that Bob was sick, he was ill, and blah, blah, blah. So, okay. So he took me to Tuff Gong. We go to Tuff Gong. Knocks on the door, studio door, out comes Family Man and Carly. So I meet Carly. God bless Carly. Hold on.
This is a lot of information. I'm out of breath.
I can't even get to 1983. Ooh. Until I could get through these 80s and let you know how I got to this point, okay?
Oh, my goodness. So, I'm out of breath.
No, well, see, some people have talked over the past about, you know, like putting together a film or some kind of documentation of LA reggae and different musicians, and no one has done it. So this is kind of like
no
really
one.
And I'm not waiting there, but just for this opportunity to speak, that's why I have to kind of give this information, because I don't know
That's
when
right.
I'll
That's
be able
right.
to say this or do this again, or, you know, if anybody's even interested, who knows? So this is the opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So the interest is there. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I got to kind of back up and give you some of this information in history. Okay. So like I said, in 81, so I'm in Jamaica. I go to Tuff Gong with Horse Mouth, and I meet Family Man and Carly. And I asked him, you know, I want to meet Bob. So about Bob Nodea. But Bob is, you know, I said, well, I heard, you know, her Bob is sick. I'm saying, you look a young youth, you know? And at that time, I'm what, 26, I think. 25, 26. And they said Bob was not there, you know, but Bob's going to be all right. He'd be all right. So, okay, cool, you know, because, you know, we all concerned the word. So Bob's going to be all right. All right, so cool. So left them, went, and who do I see? Kid Asai.
Whoa.
This is hanging out at Tuff Gong. And then who else do I see? The Diamonds, all three Diamonds.
Oh, my.
I saw the Diamonds in L.A. right before I came over here. And it's like, the Diamonds, you want to meet the Diamonds? Hey. No, Diamonds, come. And he called up the Diamonds. And I meet Tabby, Judge, and Bunny. And so it was a magical day, time. Then we left, went to Quick Kid Asai's house, hung out with Kid Asai, smoked some of the best herb I ever smoked in my life. I'm just having these experiences, these mystical, natural, mystical experiences that were just blowing my mind. Trust me. So it was amazing. Okay, so we come back home because it was February, March. So I come back home. And even before I left, I was driving a school bus as a Natty. Okay. And so before I left, I asked my supervisor, could I leave and make this little pilgrimage? You know, I was going for 2 weeks. I'd come forward and I'd be all right. And well, I'd be able to have my job because it wasn't my vacation time. And this is a black man I'm talking to. And the man told me, looked at me straight and said, if you leave, you come back, you won't have a job. So I was like, and this is before I have any youths, okay? So I'm like, so I'm, you know, a little stressed and worried. And I'm like, man, I can't go. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, wait a minute. This house Negro gonna tell me I can't go? And if I go, I come back, I ain't gonna have no job. I said, fuck him and his job. Blood clot. I'm gone. I'm gone.
We've all had that self-talk.
Yeah, so I left, you know, went to Jamaica, came back. When I come forward, go back to the job, no problem. Still got my job. I said, you look a bomba. You see it? See, a man like you, look a colonial-minded man, stop black man from progressing because you're fear. And I told him I was going on a spiritual pilgrimage. This is something personal to me. I need this time for me. His back on me. So I'm glad that I listened to my spirit and listened to the higher inner voice within and said, yeah, follow your intuition, go do this. So I did that, made that move, came forward home, and that was in March, February, March. Bob passed away in May. So everybody was, it was like time stood still. I remember the day he passed, it was like time stood still. A dreadful day. Dreadful. I'm calling Jamaica, talking to my brethren in Jamaica, and it was just a dreadful time. So I end up going to Jamaica Forward in 81 with my wife and the whole family. So we have to go as a tribute to Bob. We got to go honor Bob at Sunsplash, 81. So the whole family went. And that's when my wife went. She was pregnant with our first youth. So we went to Sunsplash, did all that, went to a 12 tribe thing, experienced Briggy. At a 12 tribe thing, Briggy didn't come out to 2-3 in the morning. When you come in, you have two Guinness in the hand and a big spliff and mush up the place. So, so these are my experiences, you know, of going to Jamaica. And then, yes, Stevie Wonder performed with Third World. Bob. So it was a amazing time. So, okay, so now I come forward, now I'm home.
Wait, hold on, that's a big thing right there, because that right there, Stevie and Third World, that triggered a whole nother thing.
Trust me, when Dean Frazier came out and played Redemption Song on his sax,
oh my God.
it was not a dry Right. It wasn't a dry face, tears on everybody's face, not a dry eye in the place. I mean, everybody crying because it was so emotional. It was oh, amazing. So yeah, this history is amazing. But yeah, that was 81. So when I come forward, I was already working with another band by the name of Third Eye. And we had backed up Leroy Smart, Ken Booth, Carl Dawkins and Carl Dawkins' father, a few artists. So I had gotten a few props, playing and backing up some of these artists. And then mind you, I'm African American, not Jamaican. So I'm let me back up and get that straight. Iman was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I tell everyone that. I never one time try to tell anybody I'm from Jamaica, I'm Jamaican, or trying to have some little phony accent. I don't do that. When I talk, I speak from the heart and just speak articles. So some words come out as patois, some words just come out as they come out. That's just from 50 years as a Rastaman. Okay. Yes, So I'm just going to get that straight. I want people to know that. But because my livication to this music, and I took it so serious, man said, boy, you play like a Yachty. You play like you from Jamaica. So I got props from enough man because how I play. And the thing is, you play like a Yacht man. And I've gotten that all my life. So just respect on them levels there. So yeah. So when we come forward, I left that band in 82, late 81, 82. And was at home, despondent, because bands are like marriages or like relationships. Yeah. They're deep. And if something goes wrong or you break up and mash up, it affects you deeply. So I left the band because some things weren't right. And so I was a little despondent. And I'm sitting home for about a couple of weeks. And then I got a call from the drummer from Small Axe, Bernay, saying that there's some work come up. Johnny Osborne was in town and needed a band, and they had been hearing about me. So Bernard was going to play drums, Touche was going to play bass.
Touche, what I was trying to remember his name.
Touche was the only Jamaican
for Small Axe.
Yeah, Touche was in Small Axe. He was the only Jamaican in the band at that time. Yes. And Bernard
was so handsome.
Yeah, and Bernard is African American. He's from San Diego, and I'm from LA. So we were the African Americans in the band.
And Swelele was on keyboard.
The original four, and that was Zaki playing keyboard. Zaki had just left the Twinker Brothers, and he was in LA. It was us four. It was us four: Bernard, Touche, Zaki, and myself as Small X. Those four, and we ended up backing up Johnny Osborne. And he loved us. And then we started getting a name, backing more and more people. Then Sugar Miner came to town. We backed up Sugar Miner. But with Jackie Me Too as the band leader and keyboardist. So that was Jackie Me Too, Bernay, Touche, and myself.
Jackie Me Too. That's legendary.
And we backed up Sugar Miner. And we did about 5-6 shows. And the thing about that is that Jackie was the musical director for Studio One. He was a little youth when he came into music. He's a legend. Arranger.
Legend.
Keyboard player. Nobody can play like him.
Nobody.
God bless him. He passed away, but God bless his soul. He was just a great musician. But the thing I have to mention is that because I love Jimi Hendrix so much, and so part of my style is a little, a little wild and crazy and blues and psychedelic and, rock. And sometimes I would get a fight with playing some of the more rock tones. And he was at that time. So I ended up stopped playing with some of my effects. I started playing with just wah-wah and just more clean rhythm and leads. And I started playing with my fuzz tone and distortion again. And Jackie would just say, Farai, play. Go on, Farai, play. Go on, Farai, play, man. Yeah, man. He never one time told me, don't play this, don't play that. That's not right. Go on, all right, play. And I saw this man go up on, we did a festival, backing up Sugar, in Bakersfield, and we did our own set, backing up Jackie Me Too with some of his music. And this man took the B3, took the brakes off of it, started pushing it around stage, went underneath the keyboard and started playing it like underneath the keyboard. Like Jimmy Hendrix playing guitar behind his neck, and then he's playing underneath the B3 where you can't even see, and he's playing, ripping, taking a solo. It was the most amazing shit I ever seen in my life for the keyboard player. I mean, it was wild, and that was jacking me too. So from he gave me confidence to play, just play FireEye. So from that, I just started playing with my effects again, just playing my style and playing my flavor, and people started respecting it. So we end up backing up some more artists, like Marsh Ricky was saying. We back up a lot of artists, and we end up backing up Leroy Sibbles. He loved what we did, and then Don Carlos came in.
I have a question. In '81, when you went down to your first Sunsplash, did the Wailing Souls perform that time?
I don't remember seeing the Wailing Souls. No.
Okay.
I don't remember seeing them. But actually, because it was what, 3-4 nights. Mm-hmm. And two, my wife is pregnant, and we were staying with some friends down in Lucy. Oh. And when you come to Mo Bay, you know, everything is more commercial, more hustling, mm-hmm. faster. And we in Lucy, a 10-minute, 15-minute walk from our own little spot, isolated, off the grid, off the road, nobody bothers, quiet. Peaceful. So some days we didn't want to go to Sunsplash. We just said, yeah, we're gonna stay in Lucy. The Wailing Souls may have been performing. I didn't see them because we just a couple nights we didn't go. You know, but when Steve played, and so I think it was out of the 3 or 4 nights, we went to 2. And so I may have
was Sunsplash, it was in Jared
it was
Park.
It was in Mo Bay. Yeah, it was in Mo
Bay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just great. It was beautiful. You know, I mean, you could hear the music from your hotel or from inside the city, you know, because it was so loud. And you walking towards a concert, you know, you could just hear it, you know. So it was just a beautiful time. Yeah. Yeah. So in 82, backing up these different artists, and Jackie Me Too and Sugar My Dad. So in 83, that's when this concert comes in, okay? And when we first got together with Small Axe, we said we wanted to do original material, because back then, roots reggae was so the thing, roots. Before dance hall, slackness really came in. There was some slackness.
Long before.
The slackness was such a taboo thing. It was such a thing that roots was ruling. Consciousness was ruling. So slackness was like a minute thing, a minority, you know? And so people wanted to hear more roots. So our thing was to create, not copy, not, you know, just be a cover band and just playing other people's music, you know, copy Bob Marley, you know, play Peter Tosh, you know, play some of the greats, play their music. And you learn those musics and songs from the greats as learning experiences, but then you want to create your own music. So we said, okay, we want to create and write our own songs. So that means that we all got to sing. I'm not singing. Bernard wasn't trying to sing. Zaki wasn't singing. Touche was the only one that really, really had a decent voice that was really pleasing and had confidence. But he didn't really have enough confidence, but he had the better voice, so he was singing. So we all said, okay, we got a concert coming up. Our first show is like 2 or 3 months down the line. We're going to rehearse every day and work on our material, and then do our first show. So we did that, and so I had a few songs to sing. Bernie had some, and everybody sang but Zaki. He had a couple songs to contribute, but he wasn't singing. So the three of us sang, and we did some shows. And one of our, I think it was our second, third show, it was sold out. It was Redondo Beach. It was so popular, and we're doing all our own material. And the place was going wild, going crazy. And we had done all our material. And we ran out. They were asking for encores. I think we did like 1 or 2 encores. And we had no more material. And there's still, nobody's leaving. And they're demanding more. So in the audience was Swelele, whose name at the time was It was Howie. And Howie.
Howie DaCosta.
So Howie, Swelele, and different brethren, they would come to Small Acts rehearsals, bring their Guinness, their spliff, and just listen to us rehearse because they love the band. I said, boy, the item reminds us of Jamaica in a real Jamaican band. So they would come watch us rehearse. So Swelele was one of the people that would watch us. And he wanted to join the band. But at the time, we were like, we don't want any lead singer that doesn't play an instrument. We don't want no ego thing. You don't want nobody up front just on some ego shit. We want everybody to contribute an instrument and play. It's Big Mind. So we kept him at bay. But he kept coming to rehearsal, watching us. So now we're at this show, and we ran out of material. We need more material. And we need something. So we had a brethren come up named Jamael. Not Jamael, Jasmiel. He passed away also. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Okay. No, I just, some of the images disappeared. So, but yeah. So anyway, Howie was in the audience. We, and his brother Jasmiel, we played a tune. Jasmiel came up and did a DJ thing and they loved it. So we asked Howie to come up and do a tune. And he sang a tune and people loved it. And just, they went crazy. They're already going crazy. Now we got a sweet lead singer and they just went even more crazy. So he from that, he was in the band. So he joined the band. So and then later on, Touche and Bernie had been talking about Freddie Flint. They had been playing, had played with Freddie Flint.
Oh, Freddie.
Before me. And they love Freddie and said Freddie had a great voice. So they said they wanted to bring Freddie in the band. So Freddie came in and he started playing, heard him sing. So Freddie had a very unique voice, sweet voice, and played guitar. So we played, you know, trading leads and, you know, doing like a Wailers thing. You know, I solo, he solo, and we do that. So it was cool. And it was nice for a while. Well, it lasted, but then Freddie went on to do his own solo thing. So he ended up leaving the band. And so later on, 82 comes around, we get a chance to work with more artists. Then 83 comes in, and they asked us to back up Eka Mouse and do our own set. So we did our own set. And I can't remember all the songs. Like I said, we were doing our own original songs at the time. And then we backed up Eka Mouse also at that show. And
that was a phenomenal. That was my very first reggae concert.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, and that was amazing because Roots, like I said, Roots music really ruled. People were really into Roots.
Unbelievable. I could not believe when I was sitting in the audience, I caught Reggae My Lightest that day. I haven't been right since.
I feel you. Like I said, because when I saw Bob the first time, and I had gone to the Starlight, it was a club in Hollywood. It was Star something, not the Starlight Bar, not the venue in Burbank, but Starwood. It was a Starwood in Hollywood, and they had different rooms and disco room, and they had a reggae band. And I don't remember the name of the reggae band, but I remember seeing a band play, and they kind of reminded me of Inner Circle. But I don't remember the name of the band, who they were. I just know they were dynamic, and I love the music. I said, but it's new to me. This is like 74, 75. No, 75, 76.
Wow. 75,
77, maybe, the latest. Somewhere up in there. But, yeah. So, you know, I hadn't really been exposed to any reggae other than that one time at this club. And then seeing Bob, and it just changed me. And then seeing him again. And then, you know, backing up artists and... So, and then we end up backing up the Wailing Souls, the original four, and that was interesting.
That
was amazing. I have a few photos and pictures. I have to find them and upload them and put them up someday soon when I can find some. I've lost a few over the years, but I have a few where Small Acts where we're backing up the four, and you may see three or four of them at the time. But yeah, that was.
So Lester, great.
Yes,
you were on this. This is from 1983 at Long Beach State.
Okay,
and you were on this, correct?
Yes.
So let's get a taste of it.
Okay, sure.
And yeah. All that Ikamo say. Would you like to hear what Ikamo say? Bini bini bang bang bini bang bang bini bang bang bini meh. Bang bang bini bang 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 bini meh bina bina bang bang bina bing bing bina meh. Bang bang bing 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 bina bina bang bang bing 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 meh. Early Sunday morning, the morning began to smuggle in.
Now, if that's your band.
Yeah, that's my band. That's funny because I hear my guitar. I hear my tone. I hear me picking guitar in there, too. I hear me.
So look. That was excellent.
Oh,
you know, that was excellent. You know,
that band. Good.
Rastafari. That band sounds steady. You know, yeah, man. That's. But see, we got props. We got props because we play like most Jamaicans here, like a Jamaican band. You know,
we played.
See, and this is 1983. Okay.
Yeah.
No Cali reggae. Ain't no Cali reggae term. That none of that. It was none of that. Okay.
No Kingston roots. Cali.
Roots.
You know.
This is what I want to do, because that history is so rich and inspiring. I want to before we Masariki and Jinjay, before we get to both of you, can we see if anybody in the on the panel want to ask him some questions? Right.
Okay.
Let's go to Ahi.
Yeah, brother. Big ups to the small acts like me and my roommates and like for the early 80s. Look, every month we saw you at least once.
Yeah, man.
At least once. We was down there. Me, Gaidi, Jao, Ali Muhammad. We was running in there.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
And listen,
yeah, man.
And listen, all the things. Look, I remember meeting Muda Baruka backstage at Cal State Long Beach after Gil Scott Heron gave a solo show.
Okay.
You know, that's the kind of thing that was running through Long Beach, and y'all did get down at the concert.
Thank you.
Reggae is all over the world, like you were saying. I met a brother. The brother was my chauffeur and my interpreter in the Gambia, and all I heard from him the whole time was, Babylon, man. Babylon. We got to deal with Babylon. And I'm riding through the terrain, and it's looking like something out of what's the old book we used to read to take you all around the world?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even talk about it. Yeah.
And we listening to reggae.
Right.
It is around the world.
It is.
And I'm talking about they be bumping it for real and know the lyrics. And he was Mandinka, could speak a little English, but he could sing those songs.
He knew patois.
You know,
that's funny you say it, because when I went to my first time going to the continent of Africa, and we backed up Small Axe, we backed up Don Carlos, 1984. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, they have their own dialect, the Shona and the Belly. They had they speak their own languages. Now, they do speak some English, but they have their own languages. But they love Bob. And they speak in English and learning English from Bob. Same thing when I went to Japan. I met Japanese who couldn't speak any English. But with what they could speak, they learned from mimicking Bob Marley lyrics on his songs. So, yeah, man, this music is universal. And like I was saying earlier myself, I marvel that what this music has done for me. Taking me all over the world, okay? And look where you took me. Now here I am, 69. I'll be 70 this year, Christmas Day. Okay, I'm 16. All right. I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I mean, I look back and think, look where you like myself. Born in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Been all over the world. Been to Indonesia, China, Japan twice, Italy's, Germany, Austria, France, Holland, Colombia, Brazil,
boom, boom,
four times.
Boom, 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 boom.
And was right at home, huh? Right at home.
Music. Playing reggae music, okay? I wasn't playing funk. I wasn't playing blues. Or
conscious reggae music. Conscious
reggae music. Boom shaka.
Right. Oh yeah. Hey, we used to get
boom shaka. Boom, 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 boom.
Around the world.
We used to give Eka Mouse a little heat because we didn't think he was conscious enough in the time. You know.
Still is.
No, but I'm gonna tell you, Mouse is a real character. There's no doubt.
He's a character.
But, he's very conscious. But his part of his act is his act. So he's always acting in his act. When he's not.
But I want to ask your opinion on this.
Talking to him directly. No, he's an intelligent guy, and he knows some things. But he's just a character. So that being said,
I'd like to ask you this.
Sure.
I've talked to some Jamaicans, some brothers. I was down there this past summer too, and we were talking, and they were saying that. Really, that the people in Kingston really didn't appreciate Bob until after he was dead. They said that they really wasn't even listening to his music like the rest of the world was.
Well, okay, what I can say from being around when Bob was around, I wasn't in Kingston, but I was here, and we were reading everything we could get our hands on about Bob or about reggae, about Rastafari, and I remember, you know, in trade magazines and. Rolling Stone, Cream, different magazines and stuff, you know, and they had even People magazine. No, they had a lot of propaganda, you know, about Rasta. But but Bob got a fight straight up. I remember in articles, Jamaicans saying, boy, Bob, a folly boy, a folly boy that. Bob, I know real reggae, I know roots. And so he got a real fight from enough Jamaican. Enough envy and jealousy because he was successful. He's half white. He's light skinned. We know about the whole light skin, dark skin dichotomy in our race.
In the diaspora.
Every race has that same shit. I work with Asians. Asians hate on other Asians. Hispanics hate on other Hispanics.
Yes,
Black people,
yes.
We hate on each other the same way. White people from the North hate on Southerners and people from the West.
It's a human being problem.
Okay, human being. It's a lot of fuckery with us within our tribalism, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got to fight. Yeah, because he was successful.
That's and, you know, white supremacy.
International. He did mingle. He did mingle with other races. He did go out with other women and all that. All that's been documented. Yeah. Okay. But he was a powerful brother, and he spread Rastafari to the four corners of the earth. Okay?
And he identified as an African.
Now you get no argument from me.
Straight up. I mean, there's articles. There's. I remember even hearing someone ask Bob about being Jamaican. He said, Jamaican? Like, he laughed at that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know? Yeah, that's where I'm born and I respect it. But me, I'm siding with God.
Yeah,
the white side, the black side. I'm with
God. I'm with God.
Identifying himself as a black man because they know they see you a nigga, you a black man. There ain't no white man. You might be half caste, might be light skinned. I'm very light skinned. Okay, I didn't make myself. I didn't have no choice.
There you go. I love that. I love that Bob was asked one time in
Reasoning.
He was asked in an interview
about being Jamaican.
About being a Rasta. What is it to be a Rasta?
Oh yeah, with that too, yeah.
And he said you have to come from your heart, pure, clean hands and pure heart. And then the man said to him, well, do you have to be black to be a Rasta? And when Bob answered this question, I cried. He said, did you have a choice?
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
He said, and if you had a choice, you better be black.
Yeah, and most people, and we know in this world right now, most people have their choice. A lot of people would not want to be black. Okay,
no,
a lot of white people. That's one of the problems. We won't have honest race discussions, because when the real history comes out, some people are embarrassed. Mm-hmm. They shamed. Now, we trying to not trying to shame anyone, but me, myself, as a 69-year-old person coming up, I remember black and white TV. I remember when none of us were on
me
TV.
Me too.
A few of us
I remember
on TV.
That. And, I remember them when the TV used to turn off.
On TV, that represented all of us. So we mm-hmm. didn't want to see nobody black doing nothing ignorant or stupid or violent or foolish. Now you got so many choices, stations, channels of the yin yang, and everybody doing whatever they want to do. Okay, so it's wild.
Right.
We remember the times where we didn't have these choices, and we didn't have these phones and cell phones, and you know, we didn't have any of this. Okay?
None. Okay? My daughter.
It's a beautiful thing that we've evolved, but let's keep it real. You know,
my daughter.
Do we have a choice? Do we have a choice? No, we not a choice. You find yourself, just born. So you're born Asian. African,
I love
African-American,
when he
white,
answered that question. I cried, man.
Yeah, man. But it's the truth. We had no choice. You find
he
yourself here.
No choice.
Your parents did whatever they did, but you here. Okay. Now I'm a firm believer in reincarnation, because I know, say, you know, I've been here before, and I will come again. You know, as Jai sees fit, and has me as a servant. Okay. But yeah, man. You know, it's real. Oh.
Let me get to some other people.
Sure.
We have a few other people here. Let's go
no
to
problem.
Crystal. Crystal?
All righty. Greetings, everyone. I'm very inspired by these stories. I grew up on reggae and jazz. My stepfather played both. Mm. And I am... that's the main one was Bob Marley. So I'm, you know, that's... I grew up with that and all the other ones that are saying something. And I'm just honored. My work is, part of my work is spiritual healing, but part of my work is music healing. And it all is in one, you know, like ancestral cultural spiritual healing. And our culture, the origin of all humanity, is a powerful culture, you know, many cultures. And, you know, all over Africa, you know, where there was no dividedness as far as borders and things like that. So we come from one root, and I'm proud that and our musics of the African diaspora and on the continent, all of the musics of Africa, they have many of the same similar elements that I found that is in all our musics, that which is why it's so powerful. It is a healing. The origins of our music, the healing are the healing purposes. When they talk about Kwetu Mutua speaks of the first drum and Queen Marimba creating the first drum and Queen Marimba singing the first song and the purpose of that. And it was so healing for everyone. And that the music playing a certain instrument, a certain bow harp, was the infirmer, the thing used for healing anyone who was in the hospital, you know, infirmed. And, and so our music, when we remember the purposes are healing and the purposes are to uplift and to speak the truth. The true art is to speak the truth for the good of all, for the right. all of humanity. It's going to touch everybody, whether they know the language or not. They're going to hear the rhythms, those African rhythms. They're going to hear the polyrhythms. That's what we have, many rhythms all at once. And they're going to hear the element of improvisation where the spirit takes over, and they're going to hear where you're not on any scriptures, nothing's written, and you're listening to each other. And it's community. That's another communal element where we're all working to hearing each other. And there's no separation between the audience and the musicians, where it becomes one. It becomes.
I'll use two words, spiritual intent. Yes. When you hear our music, you know that and you feel our spiritual intent. Okay, whether it's blues, jazz, funk, reggae, Afrobeat, all our music comes from our struggles and our victories.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the music of it is
the. You feel the spirit and you feel the intent of what we're trying to convey. And that's our struggle and our victories in all our music, straight up.
It's all interrelated, including Afro Latin and all the different versions of reggae. Reggae is a part of that, you know. So it's all the music of the African diaspora, and you're going to hear those elements, that those beat notes you're going to hear. So I can't really, you know, I can't really elaborate, but.
I get you. Just all of our music is.
I also wanted to mention that I knew Jerry Davis. I didn't know he made his transition, and also his best
friend. Oh, my goodness.
At the time, his best friend. I met him when I first started songwriting and things like that out here. I'm an ASCAP member. This is my hat.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't know. And Didon Kamasi, who he formed their first record label that was signed to Interscope, which is what I was had met with them at Interscope about, because I was thinking to start my own record label. And they were like, well, we can't tell you how to do what, but we can tell you what not to do. We can tell you from our mistakes, what not, you know, not to repeat certain mistakes. Yeah. So that Jerry Davis was a really beautiful person. So I'm glad, Mashariki, you mentioned him. I know you guys were really close. You were even roommates, right?
Yes, yeah. We know him from college. We were
college mates, and Jerry was a very special person. And we weren't going to segue onto this, but now that you mention it, it was when he graduated from Long Beach State, he started working at ASCAP. Yeah. And, you know, like anybody, a brother at a big company like that, they want you to jump through hoops and do all sorts of things when they snap. And it wasn't happening quick enough. And they were, you know, making problems. He said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, well, let's have a workshop. Let's tap a reggae workshop for reggae artists to write songs so that they can have a better understanding of how they can get paid on the music that they create instead of just giving it away.
But Mashariki, I'm sorry to have to cut you, because what I want to say, because, you know, the memory is sensitive.
Yes, it is.
When something flushes in, you want to jump on it. Continuing in your vein, that workshop was so successful that we had a second one. Mm-hmm. It was the first time ASCAP met ever with reggae artists.
Mm-hmm. And for anybody that doesn't know what ASCAP is, that's the American Songwriters, Composers, and Music Publishers. It's the company that, as a writer or a publisher, you want to get paid, you are going to be a member in America of either ASCAP or BMI.
That's right.
In American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, can I mention that I have two books? The one book, well, I have three books. I can't mention the third, this one, Free Jazz Improvisation, The African Origins. Let me read it. I just want to let you guys know, because it's not because of money. It's because of, this is some truth in here that really the purpose, let me just say this, a continuum from Africa to Congo Square, from early jazz to bebop and the return to mysticism for communal healing. And and transcendence beyond oppression. And it talks about all of our music's the African origins, but then also jazz in particular, but the return to Africa, the return to spiritual and communal values, you know, that
we say roots, rock, and culture. That's exactly is what you're articulating. That's how we say it. Roots, rock, and giving the culture. It's very interesting, man.
Yeah. So you can find it.
You wrote that book, or you just sharing it?
I wrote it. Well, the
name again? Is
Crystal Black Creek Carlisle, Onyinye Chichipo.
Okay. Okay.
So, you know, that was
you can find them all on Amazon. including the willpower book, which is a spiritual. Spiritual healing.
The willpower book is another book you wrote.
All three, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, right now I didn't write that down.
But I just wanted to make
Rasha
that.
King, if you could share her that information with us later, the names of her books. Maybe she could share it with you, and then you can just.
I'll get it to him.
Okay.
Or I can put up a link.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now I want to be able to get to the other folks that are here,
just
in case they have anything, and then I also want to share the other two artists that was on the bill, so we could play a little of Marcia Griffin's, so we could hear her. Yeah. So I'll do that this moment.
Yeah.
Dance all night, too weak to hold it back. Strong enough to give your heart attack. The situation sweet my soul as long as I live.
I shall see
things
as long as I live. And as long as I live,
I shall
see. I shall see as long as I live.
Yeah, so that was one artist.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Let's get a little Freddie McGregor in here.
All right.
All right, this is Africa, Here I Come.
Africa have some real nice people. When you reach there, I know you will see it. Enough land for you and I run. Work hard and make we do be thing like that.
Right.
Boom.
That was at the show back in 1983 at Long Beach State. I want to go to Clovette Coulter.
Yes.
Do you want to unmute and ask a question or make a comment, Clovette? Just listening?
Hello.
Okay. We have Michael, I don't know if he's able to unmute. Michael, are you able to unmute? And then there's 510-589-0719. Do you have a question or comment? Cell phone caller? Okay, just listening, I guess. Okay, Marsharikhi, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you were involved in the beach blast?
Well, I was a student. I was very much a big fan of reggae music. I think I would have to say the missing people, Danny and Ayana, are instrumental in turning me on to at least Sunsplash and visiting Jamaica and really getting into the culture itself. Well, I think my first trip to Jamaica was in 1980. I knew who Bob Marley was. I'd never seen him perform, but once I went to Sunsplash, as a vocalist, I'm a vocalist, so I had been doing R&B. And like Lester said earlier, I watched it go from gigs everywhere, clubs everywhere, live music everywhere, crack cocaine hit, disco hit, musicians were turning in their instruments for crack fights, and that was just really unfortunate. So I was able to watch how it just went to electronic, you know. Donna Summers came in, and then you could take one person and that's all you needed to do a whole album. So a lot of people weren't working anymore. A lot of places were not investing in live entertainment. There was no more dancing. There was no more live nothing. There was so many clubs that were opened in Los Angeles. You could just go into a cluster of places where all kinds of music was playing until crack hit and disco hit, and that changed the scene forever. Doing R&B music, one of the things I did not like working with a band was I didn't like people walking up on me while I was singing, because I never knew what drug they were on, if they were on alcohol or something else, and it used to make me really nervous. So I stopped doing R&B music. I and started doing reggae because I said it was much more conscious. I'm never going to have to worry about somebody putting their hands on me, tripping on a drug that I didn't know what it was, or trying to do any kind of harm to me. So it just seemed like a step. It was better than doing gospel music, because gospel to me, I sing gospel music, but it's kind of like, I don't want to say judgmental, but it's not as open as like singing reggae music. I mean, it has its spiritual touching and things like that. It has its proper place, but it wasn't the same as the freedom that came with singing reggae music and how it was accepted all over the world. I've been to Bali, Indonesia. I was singing jazz in Bali, Indonesia, but when I walked down the street, people that couldn't speak English were touching their arm. They about the same color of me and their hair and saying, we the same people. And they could still say Bob Marley because I was still wearing locks at that time. So music is a universal thing. It touches everything. It changes people's lives. It soothes people. It heals people. Certain notes can be played that can heal you physically and mentally and spiritually. So I'm happy to be able to have that genre of music to even express myself in, because it definitely makes life different, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, reggae saved my life. What can I say? You know, it just taken me around the world, but it's helped me to interact and relate to people and meet people that I would never had a chance to interact with.
I didn't want to say, can I say one more thing? I need to come back. I wanted to say it saved me and my roommate. When we were at Michigan State at the time in my undergrad years in Michigan, where I'm from Detroit. Mm-hmm. And we had
what
to play,
up, though?
We didn't play Black Euro every day, Chanty, you know, Steel Pulse and all of them. If we weren't playing that kept us going in our 2% black school. It was, you know, only 2% black. You know, and all the West were white and very little anything else, even less. So, yeah. And when I was able to meet Black Uru here, and or was it actually with Steel Pulse, not Black Uru, but when I was able to meet them,
Uhuru.
Yes, Black Uru, Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Uhuru. Yeah.
Aista.
Yeah, man. And so, when I met them, I can't remember which member it was, not the lead singer, but we looked at each other and we were asking this question, like, what part do you have? And I was just talking about that recently. What part do you have? What do you know about us Africans? You know, what do you remember? It felt like it's like a missing piece that each one brings a part of it. You know, like what was taken from us, it's still in us, you know. It, of course, there's some cellular memory and there's some Africanisms, but there are some things that we each retain. And so it's like, well, what is your, I can't, you know, really articulate it, but it's
well,
like,
we
both have that longing to want to know, you know. And
this is what I say, for me, the Christians talk about their Trinity. Mm-hmm. My Trinity is North America, the Caribbean, Africa. That's my Trinity. That's how I feel I'm going to journey forward to Africa, to that line. And reggae music is my transportation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jen J.
Beautiful.
Yes,
can we get to you now? We want to know who you are.
Hey, we want to say greetings in the name of everything good. And in this house, we say Ja Rastafari.
Right.
Yes. And as we talked about the beach blast, what is important to me about that beach, or the significance of the beach blast, is that was before Sunsplash Tour. That showed those particular Jamaicans, who are we talking about, Tony Johnson and Ronnie Burke, them, mm-hmm. that there was an opportunity that Lester Farah and the brethren laid the roots for. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I recognize that because if the I them didn't beat continuously beating the drum to bring in people like myself. Again, Long Beach was my first reggae show. And I cried. I cried when I sat in the audience. I saw white, black, and they were smoking herb in public because, you know, I was a puff and hide. You know, them days we had to hide when we smoked the herb, you know. And them just smoke it so. And I'll never forget, there was this young family and they had a child that must have been maybe 8 to 10 years old. The little girl was obviously had Down syndrome. She had put down one piece of dancing and spinning and nobody now make, she was so free. I said, what kind of music is this? I ain't been right since, man.
Let me just add to this. You know, I was doing a lot of traveling all over the place. I think one summer I just tried to visit every beach I could in California. And I was up north and I went to a reggae concert at UC Berkeley. I took pictures. I brought them back and showed Jin Jay. I didn't know that the pictures of the people I took, which was the Wailing Souls, that was going to be somebody in her life forever.
Yes. Unbelievable. And at that time, I was calling it reggae. I didn't even know what it was. Mm-mm. And I kept the picture. I don't know what made me keep this picture of these brothers on the stage. This is when they were wearing the white tracksuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the red, gold, and green trim. Remember them outfits there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also at Long Beach State, at that particular show, is the first time that my eyes actually see live Garty, and not on the picture.
Mm.
It's the first time him look for me and me look for him, you know? Okay, we look for each other.
Mm-hmm. He was not on the show, he was just there.
Yeah, the Wailing Souls were just there hanging out because Freddie and Marcy and Studio One and Bug and the whole of them, you know.
Yeah, all so friends, all family, you know, from
the area. Yeah, they're all family. So them up there and laugh and drink and smoke. And it's my first, and that show, I had on a Panama hat with a blue sash. I thought that was cute, you see? And Freddie McGregor looked for me and tell me, say, my hat was trash. I was insulted. I said, did this guy just say my hat is trash? Not realizing that it was a compliment.
Different terminologies, you know. We're learning at those times, you know.
I didn't understand patois.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're all learning, you know. See, that's one of the reasons why I said I needed to go to Jamaica myself. Because, you know, we have these stereotypical ideas and mindsets that other Africans of other places in the diaspora don't like us. You know, Africans and people from the Caribbean don't like African Americans and vice versa. And it's just a lot of propaganda and a lot of negative narratives that have been perpetuated by people who are ignorant and don't really know. But we all have something to bring to the table and to contribute. And African Americans, per se, our contribution around the world is so valuable. It's not even funny.
So significant. We are the missing link.
Well, we're all connected, and that's the thing. Oh, we are the missing link, but we're all connected, and no one is.
We are all connected.
Yeah, one is better than the other. Just because you got an accent, mm-hmm. or you born in the Caribbean, and blah blah blah, don't make you no better and no different. And see, mm-hmm. one of the things I can say, myself. Because, you know, Rastafari is such a dear concept and liberty. It's a liberty, way of life for me.
That's right.
And going to Ethiopia in 2003, that's why I said this part is music. Because, mm-hmm. like I said again, myself as a local youth, born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, grew up out here in California and been all over the world. And going to Ethiopia to perform in 2003. And getting a private tour of Jubilee Palace, one of His Majesty's palaces. And going to His Majesty's bedroom, Empress Menin's bedroom, touching his garments, seeing all these different artifacts that throughout Rasta history, we say 72 different nations bowed before His Majesty. We're going through the palace saying, Jah Rastafari, and the servants who are upkeeping the palace and keeping everything as is, like when His Majesty's last day there in flesh. So everything is intact. And they just would smile when they hear the Rastaman shout, Jah Rastafari. And we send 72 different nations bow before His Majesty. They say, no, my brother, it's over 80 nations bowed before Him. We said, what?
What?
In 72 different nations for so many years. See, so experience teaches wisdom. By us going there directly, getting this direct experience in Ethiopia, getting baptized in Orthodox faith as a Rastaman, and going to Shashamani, you know, going to these places, we never imagined. These things we know you hope to see or maybe might happen to you, but to actually go get this blessing over 20-something years ago, okay, is just amazing to me to this day.
That wow.
Tron has taken me all over the earth, and I'm playing reggae music. Like I say, I'm not playing funk, but even though I put little elements of these funk and blues, nigga jazz inside the reggae, inside the bingi, you know, because reggae is such a royal music, it can encompass all these other styles and genres within the music still, and still have its roots. So I've been blessed to travel and to go all over the world representing this music. So that's why this is really dear to me, and that's why I said the spiritual intent. Because that's what brought me to the music. That's what stopped me getting high and wanting to go within myself and find my true self and my calling. Mm-hmm. And when I, Joshua, I mean, this is what you're supposed to be doing. I'm telling you, when I had that epiphany, it was life-changing. What is happening to me? Why am I feeling like this? This is deep. But if you crying in your meditation, crying in your prayers for years, and asking God to reveal Himself to you. And then when it's revealed, there's no doubt. You go and you move how the Spirit is presenting itself to you. That's why I say spiritual intent. Because I know what my spirituality is in Africa. And I know my intent is positive. And it's African.
Mm-hmm. So
that being coupled together is reggae music. Roots.
Nice.
Positive. You got to hear it. It can't be all this slackness. And, you know, so the music is morphed and evolved in different ways, and it's been a beautiful thing, but at the same time, there's room for everyone. So within that being said, there's room for slackness too. So do you have a lot of slackness and women half naked, men talking about the nastiest, filthiest things within the music? And there was a time we could never imagine that because the music never stood for that.
Right.
But because there's room for everyone, people are bringing in their elements and their likes and dislikes and whatever. So it's in the music, but the real roots of what we love and is life-changing is Rasta music, roots music. You know, yeah, authentic roots. Music is going to uplift your spirit, feed your spirit, your mindset, relate to your homeland or where you came from, your roots, and tradition. And a lot of these things, you know, have been stripped from us as Africans. So reggae is really like a full circle for us coming home and finding yourself and having a music that you can relate to. Because I love blues, but some of the blues can be too bluesy, too despondent, too negative, too much on a relationship. Now, it was broadening itself out to, like, you know, you're dealing with issues, social issues, racial issues, and political issues. And then it's more inclusive to a wider range of interests and people. So that's why you have reggae from all over the world, Japan. I mean, I lived in Japan for 3 months playing reggae music. And all these bands playing reggae and playing black music, Japanese, playing reggae, playing funk, playing jazz, playing R&B, playing ska, playing mariachi. Okay. So, you know, when people love something that you do in your music, they're going to adapt it, you know, or try to adapt themselves to it. So therefore, you have a lot of other races playing reggae. So whereas reggae's gotten a fight in the United States, it's big in Europe. It sells big in Europe. Vinyl sells big in Europe to this day. Concerts and attendances are in Europe, and they still love roots music. Whereas, you know, here in America, giving roots reggae a fight for years, people love the music, but they won't let it infiltrate the airwaves. Whereas like in the UK, you have just one chart and everybody's on it. You don't have a pop chart and a blues chart and a reggae chart and, you know, they do, no, just the top. And whoever fits in, you fit in. And so you want to hear everybody's music, you know, unbiased. And American airwaves is so biased with so much negative music where they're pushing to our youths so they can keep making money by keeping you down, ignorant, and fighting and infighting.
Frustrated, yeah.
Frustrated, misogyny and homophobia and all this crazy, this all kinds of this madness. But we're dealing with roots. We're dealing with positivity in the message. So that's what we want to uplift people with. And there's room for everyone to do that. But don't exclude the black man. Don't exclude the Rastaman from reggae music and have Cali Reggae or all these white groups opening up these festivals and having, because it's about money, capitalism. So ticket sales, fan base, they're organized. They have large fan bases. They bring a lot of people. But the authenticity of the music is still with the roots, with the black mind.
You know, I was just listening to a website that was, excuse me, a podcast that was talking about that. And it's something, we just sit down at this point in 2025 and look at, what was it, Humboldt County, no, it was the Sierra Nevada Festival that they advertised and then they had to cancel because of ticket sales. Like, what?
See,
and they
but
had the roots artists.
But see, that was what made that festival so unique and cherished, because they would bring in original, authentic roots artists, veteran artists that would never come here or never had come here to perform, or rarely perform here, and they would bring those artists. So some of your favorite artists you maybe never got a chance to see, you would see them at Sierra Nevada.
That
festival was so unique because they had artists that just didn't bastardize themselves or were just on every festival or just everywhere. They might have been just only on that one festival and maybe one other show somewhere else, and that was it. And they were going back to England or going back to Jamaica or, you know, or wherever. But that show was very unique because of that. And once COVID hit and the attendances changed and safety regulations and all that stuff, protocols changed, a lot of things closed down and didn't reopen.
And then Warren Smith passed away.
The founder himself, he passed away.
That hurt a lot too.
She picked it up and she was carrying it, but because of the ticket sales and the endorsements and sponsorships, have dried up to a level.
They all went over to the Monterey Fest that the Cali Roots were doing, because that was like doubly sold out.
Well, they're more commercialized festivals, but Sierra Nevada and there's a few other festivals around the country, but that was mainly the main one that was so unique.
Yeah, that used to be. That's why I can't believe now in 2025 it's lost its significance.
I was scheduled to play on that last year. Yeah, I was scheduled to play on there last year with Sister Rima, and it was like a week or two before the actual show was canceled, and the whole thing was postponed or canceled, and they had to give people their money back, and it was just a big mess. But see, but in the past, being honest, it being there up in Humboldt County in those areas, it was a lot of ganja money. Let's not be tended. It was a lot of ganja money. And this is before ganja was legalized. So that money was being laundered and spread out and invested in different ways. Okay. Now that herb is legal and is everywhere, that money is no longer there.
Yeah.
Those no longer there. So that ganja money that was sponsoring a lot of work, festivals for certain people and certain things is gone. And then the sponsorships. And you don't want just beer or alcohol sponsorship. You want other people, you know, to be involved. And it's not about liquor and all that. So,
in closing, that's
where the money was. And that's why a festival like that folded, because beforehand, this promoter had the money to pay artists, whether they got the money from the door or not. And see, a lot of promoters that are not viable don't have the right monies and backing. They're looking at the money coming from the door, and it doesn't happen, then it's a flop. And that's what was happening with that. They're looking at ticket sales to save their asses without the endorsements. And so therefore, no festival. And I haven't heard anything about one happening this year, because it usually happened in June and July, I think. So it's gone. So if it'll ever come back, who knows? But we need reputable people. And there's some issues with some of the festivals in Jamaica, from Sunfest and the non-Jamaicans investing in Jamaica or in the festivals and running the festivals, having the most money, the most say. So we as Africans, we have to organize and centralize, like his Imperial Majesty said, to organize, centralize, get our businesses.
Yeah, Martin Garvey told us a long time ago. Nevertheless, this is what we're going to organize and do now. We're going to organize and meet on the 26th down at the Recreation Cafe. We're all going to meet, and we're going to jam to Lester Farai's music. And we can all sit down and just have a little snack, a little something, and jam all together. Can we agree that we can do that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I'd love to have you. Like Sister said, it's a free show, and it's right here in Mid-City. And trust me, I mean, I posted up a post this morning, today, or yesterday, saying, you know, I'm often asked, why don't you play in L.A.? Why do you always play out in the white line area, in white people's area, at Hollywood, Laguna Beach? Okay, right now we got a free show right here in the middle of the city, free, with gentrification.
And a good show.
And gentrification is going on, but we got a venue right here in our neighborhood. And it's you've been there twice, so you know it's nice.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's nice.
Great atmosphere, good food, and it's free. So
yes, we're going to meet there 30 minutes before the show starts, so we can get a good little table, so we can see the show, have a little snack, little drinks,
and come enjoy yourself. Like I said, because it's a free thing. It's a free show.
And I had a lovely time. I loved it. It was worth my 45-minute drive.
Well, give thanks. I was really honored to see you come, because I know you come from, you know, your area, Pomona area, and Inland Empire area. And it's a little drive. But when we played in Laguna Beach, that's like over an hour drive. And we had people on a regular would come and visit us and see us perform in Laguna Beach. And that's where it's like, well, that's what they would say. Why we can't see you in L.A.? Well, we got to go all the way to Laguna Beach, or we've only seen you in Hollywood or San Diego, and we haven't played Hollywood in a long time. Here we are right here in the middle of the city. I can walk from my house to this venue. It's less than a mile from me, if maybe a mile max. But anyway, it's right in the middle of the city, Mid-City. And right up the street from Juicy's restaurant, you know, same street on Washington. Mm-hmm. And just would love to see more people come out, because this is our neighborhood. This is us. See?
Yeah.
And when things get rough and the prices get crazy, and other people, middle class or what have you, money start changing, they got to move back to the city. Our white flight is over. They got to come back to the city now. Now they're taking these areas and gentrifying them and making them, and investing in these areas. So it's about oneness. It's one world. We got to live together. All this separate
That's
stuff.
That's right.
The rich, the elite living over in one place. That's, when earthquake hit, all that shit fall. When fires hit, everybody's affected, right? Okay,
right.
When the rain falls, like Bob said, when the rain falls, it don't fall in just one man house. Okay?
That's right.
All get rained on. Okay? So this is, you know, we all breathing the same air. Okay? Ain't nobody special. We're in this together. So let's show love and treat each other with love and support each other.
There
love
are
each
stuff for it. Let me say, let's do this, because we can talk all night. And I gotta go take care of my mommy. So I can leave you guys to the discussion, but I'm gonna have to go.
Well, all right.
That's for your mother. That's beautiful.
Yeah, we're gonna
she's 100. She's 90 or 100. She's 100 or 90.
101.
My
she's
mother's 101.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So yes. What we're gonna do, folks, we're gonna go ahead and close. This has been very enlightening, enriching. And there's a lot of adjectives that can explain what just happened this evening. And yeah. I just appreciate everybody coming out. And guess what? We're going to keep doing this.
Hey, Mashrika and I were talking and saying, can we do another one? And we would like to incorporate Barbara Barabino so she can talk about
we're gonna
reggae
do,
for cultural awareness and Ragamuffin production.
Oh, yes. This is the second one, okay? So that means this is the second one of billions.
Okay, well,
yes.
I just wanted to know.
And then I'm gonna relook at the one you did with Makeda.
Yeah. So let's take our pause. We had Rohan Marley on here, and we said, okay, we're gonna end this evening. He said, no, we're not gonna end. We're gonna take our pause. So we adopted that.
Yeah,
so we're taking a pause, and we're coming back. We're coming back. I appreciate everybody.
It was my honor, and it was just my honor to be able to be invited and to be able to participate. And I'm more than ready and willing to do it again, because there's a lot of layers to our history within the city, and my story, not his story, but my story, our story. So. I'm game. I'm willing to do it again.
Yeah, when your music ready, we're gonna do another podcast, and then you can introduce your music to us. That'll be the topic when you're ready.
Okay. All right. That sounds beautiful.
Appreciate it, everyone. Let's take our pause, and I'm gonna
say we appreciate love. We appreciate love. Everyone's efforts.
One love. Give me thanks.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Wow, this has been great. Thank you all so much. Rashiki, you run things. Give thanks.
Give thanks. We run things.
Give thanks to Jah. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. But me, I acknowledge to take you a time to put it together. I want to rock. I want to acknowledge your effort. And it's like, as you say, it's only the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Forward, right?
Jah bless you. And thank you for having me.
Okay.
Yes.
Rastafari.
Rastafari.